Now, they did lose their entire offensive line from last year, and so they had to replace, you know, everybody up front for them. And we return, you know, our defensive line from last year, essentially, other than Creighton, with three starters returning back there. You know, we had three starters back on the offensive line. So, you know, we feel like, you know, there's an opportunity there for us to be able to play well. But, you know, Coach Kraft has done such a good job there over the last couple of years, kind of building that program basically from the ground up. And, you know, he's going to have his kids ready to play.
That is Brad Gober, head coach of the Beloit Trojan football team, as the Trojans open up their season tonight at Belleville against Republic County. We'll have that live video stream at nckssports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel with full play-by-play announcing. That'll start about 6:45 tonight at nckssports.com, one of many games in the area that we'll preview tonight on the Football Express. But before we talk about tonight's week one, beginning of the high school football season in North Central Kansas, we have had a lot of other sports get underway this week, and last night there were plenty of results to cover, and Dusty will do that right now.
Yeah, the Beloit volleyball team got their season started last night at Ellsworth in the Triangular, and they go 1-1. They beat Ellsworth in the first match. They did lose the first set 25-17, but came back to win 19-18 in the next two. And then in the second match, they fell to Ellenwood 25-14, 25-23. They did have a 19-10 lead in the second set, but Ellenwood went on a 10-1 run to tie it at 20 and then go on to win it by two in the end over Beloit. So the Leddy Trojans again start the season with a record of 1-1 at the Ellsworth Triangular. Also, Thunder Ridge moved to 6-0 last night. They had a home triangular with two wins, beating Plainville in 20-15, and then they beat Northern Valley in 10-14. So again, Thunder Ridge picking up two victories on Thursday night in Kensington. Cross country getting underway for many of our area teams yesterday at the Concordia Invitational, and the defending 1A state champion on the boys' side is Caleb Eilert from St. John's, and he started off his season well with a win at Concordia in the time of 18:19:07, and he finished 14 seconds ahead of the second place finisher, and then Lance Lundeen was just a second behind that in third place for Beloit. So good start for the freshman there with a third place finish. Jacob Porter, Beloit, finished in fifth place. Individual girls, top 10 finishers from the area. Jane Letourneau of St. John's was third, and then Beloit went 7-8-9. Abby Porter was seventh, Jenna Bluch eighth, and Ariana Armstrong was ninth. And Beloit finished in second place as a team behind Concordia on the girls' side. You can find the full results for the Concordia Invitational at nckssports.com. Also, the Tescott Invitational, we don't have official results yet, but the boys' race was won by Reagan Bales of Osborne, and Graham Bales finished in fourth place for the Bulldogs there at Tescott unofficially yesterday in cross country as seasons opened there for area teams as well. So full results that we have so far are at nckssports.com, and hopefully later today we'll have the Tescott Invitational results posted as well from cross country.
Fantastic. All right, we are excited that football season is upon us, and I think we really need to stop for a moment and appreciate what we have tonight, because there are schools and there are teams in the state of Kansas and across the country that are not getting to play tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And some will not play at all this fall. So for all of you out there listening, whether you are a parent, whether you are just simply a fan, whether you're a coach, whether you're an administrator, an educator, a student athlete, uncle, aunt, grandma, grandpa, mom, dad, whatever it might be, if you're listening right now, take a moment and appreciate, really soak in and appreciate tonight. It will be different. Some people will have to be wearing masks. There'll be temperature checks at many gates. You'll have to wear a mask if you can't practice social distancing. You have to sit in certain spots in the bleachers, whatever the case may be. It will be different, but it will be better than the alternative of not having any sports and not having football tonight. So don't take it for granted. Enjoy tonight. If you are a parent out there and you are like, I'll watch my kid next week, or if you're a relative and I got something going on, I'll watch them next week, I would highly encourage you to rethink that through. Now, I know some people will not go because they don't want to catch anything. It'll be like a gathering, and I get that. So that certainly is an exception. But if you're in good health and you feel at least comfortable enough to go to a game and you're saying, I'm going to wait till next week, I'm telling you don't. Because this might be the only game that we get And this might be the first of 12. We don't know.
Yes.
We don't know. We can't predict the future. And if we could, well, we wouldn't be here. That's for sure. I'd be sipping on a Mai Tai on the beach somewhere. I'd be doing the Corona commercials. I'd be replacing Snoop Dogg on those commercials. But I really want people, and I'm really talking to myself a little bit right now out loud. Sounds weird. Yeah, I know I have issues. But we really need to enjoy this. You know, as radio people calling games and covering sports, I think, you know, it's just like anything else that you do for a living. You just kind of go through, you don't go through the motions, but maybe you do, but you have a routine. And you know you have your job, and you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and hey, it's the high school football season. This year is different. This year's different. Dusty and I, this offseason was different. Yeah. We didn't even put together a broadcast schedule until, 3 weeks ago? Because we're like, what's the point until we feel better about things? And luckily, there were times where Dustin and I were like, this isn't going to happen. We're not going to have high school football week one. And then all of a sudden, we got a little more optimistic. And now we do. But that week one does not guarantee week two. And so really grab on and grasp what tonight is about for high school football. And hopefully you have, whether it be volleyball, cross country, tennis, whatever sport it may be already, and any extracurricular activity for that matter too. Also grasp and understand and appreciate the first day of school this year and appreciate every day of school, because I don't know if we're going to be able to get through the whole school year without at some point having a stoppage or a halt at some school in our area. Don't know. I'm hoping that doesn't happen, but we just don't know. So the bottom line is, appreciate it. Don't take it for granted. We hear that all the time in life, right? Somebody passes away. Hey, you know, life's short. Don't take it for granted. We all say that. But this is a little bit different. Don't take this for granted. Don't blow off tonight and say, well, I'll go to next week's game. Because if you're comfortable to go to next week's game, then you really probably should make time to go to tonight's game. Now, if you are worried about going to games, then I highly encourage you to hopefully listen to the radio if the game's on the radio somewhere. Mm-hmm. Live video stream like we've got tonight for the Beloit football game. You can watch ncksports.com if you are not comfortable going to the game. And there are many places that are now doing like YouTube channels, and they're doing Facebook Lives. Might be not the greatest quality, but at least it's something for you to watch or try to follow. So I'm encouraging you to really stop and appreciate what we have tonight, because there are kids in Silver Lake, Blue Valley Randolph, many in Kansas City, many in Topeka now. They're delayed another couple weeks for football. Mm-hmm. Of course, Wichita got the green light, but I don't know if there's some teams that may not be playing down that area.
Yeah, they can't play tonight anyway.
Okay, so they're not playing tonight.
They won't start until week two because they had to stop practicing.
I just gave you a lot of coaches, a lot of schools, a lot of programs, a lot of student athletes that will not get tonight. So for all the teams in our area we cover on a regular basis, Beloit, Osborne, Smith Center, Thunder Ridge, St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, Sylvan Lucas, Concordia, and many others that are all playing tonight, grasp it, enjoy it, take it all in. And whether you win or lose tonight, at the end of the night, if you're dwelling on that you lost, no, you didn't. Everyone won. Everyone won tonight, win or lose, if we can at least have one night like this. The weather's supposed to be very nice in north central Kansas, so enjoy.
Absolutely. I'm excited. I kind of like last night, when I was going to bed, I'm like, man, tomorrow it's here. Like, we're actually going to have a football game. Mm-hmm. And I was excited. Like, I'm always excited to start the season, don't get me wrong. But the week leading up to it is usually a busier one for me, just because I'm prepping, getting ready, trying to understand what and who all the teams are, and trying to get all that information. Then once you get past that, it's pretty smooth sailing, because the teams start playing and you know who they are and everything like that. But, man, I was excited last night, understanding that today is actually right now going to happen, and we have a football game to call, and kids have football games to play tonight, which is the most important thing. And for me, as long as I've been doing this, it gets even more and more about wanting those kids to have those opportunities and you know, trying to tell their story, and not so much, you know, me worrying about what's going to happen here or there, but understanding that those kids get this opportunity to be able to be a part of a team, to be able to be a part of something special, and something even more special this year, because not everybody can do it. here on night one. So we're looking forward to that, and I'm excited.
I am as well. And hope that everything goes swimmingly, because there is a chance, somehow, some way, something could develop today. And
yes.
You're planning to play tonight. Until we get to 10 o'clock tonight, I won't be relieved the game's going to happen. And that's when the game will conclude.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe 7 o'clock tonight.
I'll when you kick them off, yeah,
you should be all right.
Be like, yeah, okay.
Should be. Although there have been situations we've seen in athletics where they find out somebody had a positive test, they've actually put them off the field. So that's no guarantee either that you kick off. I mean, odds are here probably so, but what a wild time we live in, huh?
Definitely.
Crazy. All right, so let's get into it. High school football. We'll go through our basketball schedule coming up in just a moment. But, Dusty, let's run through the games and go from there, okay?
Yeah, Northern Plains League teams playing tonight. Defending champs in 8-man Division II, Osborne, opening with Hill City this evening. And then also St. John's Tipton's hosting Sylvan Lucas. That game is in Tipton tonight. Lakeside's at Logan tonight, playing Logan Palco. Thunder Ridge hosting Stockton, Lincoln's at Tescott, Pike Valley hosting Hanover, also Wilson at Southern Cloud, and those are the main ones. Also Chase hosting Trigo and Natoma, and six-man is at Western Plains tonight. NCAA games below at Republic County here this evening, and Minneapolis hosting Southeast of Saline. Sacred Heart has a makeup game, or not a rescheduled game, but a different game than they would have played. Ellsworth cannot play this week, so Sacred Heart found a team to play, and that's Kinsley. They're going to play an 8-man game tonight there in Kinsley. Concordia is hosting Wamego tonight in NCKL play, and in the Mid-Continent League, Smith Center is at Norton this evening. So those are the main games people will be focused on in the area here tonight. Also, Rock Hills, that's a 6 o'clock start time tonight against Wichita Homeschool. So they'll start a little bit earlier, an hour earlier than the rest of these games that are slated to start at 7 o'clock here this evening. So that's a look at who's playing tonight in high school football in the area.
All right, so we'll go through our broadcast schedule, and then we'll preview the games and hear from a few of the coaches. Of course, we'll have a full preview coming up tonight, and that's where we begin with a broadcast schedule. 5:40 this evening on both our radio stations, KD Country 94 and Z96.3 Lake. We'll have the Football Express brought to you by our great friends over at Cunningham Telephone and Cable. And then at 6:30, we'll have a pregame on both stations, Hill City at Osborne. Dusty and Todd have the call from Osborne. And then the kickoff will be at 7 o'clock. At 6:45, we'll have the live video stream at nckesports.com via Blake Trojan Channel. Blake Trojan football team at Belleville to take on Republic County. And that will be at 6:45 with the video stream at nckesports.com. And that'll conclude our coverage on KD Country 94 and Z96.3 Lake and KDCountry94.com and the free apps on your smartphones, KD Country 94 and Z96.3 The Lake, with the State Farm Insurance Local High School School Board Show, brought to you by our friends over at State Farm Insurance in Beloit and Osborne. That's tonight at 10:05. So that is the schedule. It's all posted at nckesports.com for you to peruse. Let's begin with the cut that we used to start the show, and that was Brad Gober, head coach in his fourth year. Beloit Trojans moving to Class 2A this year from 3A, and it's never been a better time for Beloit to drop from 3A to 2A. The timing's perfect for them. They are missing 100% of their passing from last year, 99% of their rushing, and 85% of their receiving. But otherwise, lots of experience coming back. Okay, I'm kidding a little bit. Beloit is young, but they do have some key pieces to build around. They have Braden Burks, returning defensive linebacker, returning offensive lineman. They have Grady Seifert, returning offensive line. Burks and Seifert were second-teamers last year. Brendan Walker's back. He was a first-team league tight end. So they got some guys to build around there on offense. Cameron Conkle has experience on the line and on defense. They've got those same kids. But then also, Anthony Hinkey, the kid from St. John's Tipton, he's an athletic kid. That'll help them. But they have a new quarterback who's a left-hander, Owen Eilert. Hudson Gray, of course, graduated, had a great career. But Eilert, very sharp, very smart kid. I've known him for years. And I think Beloit will be just fine there. And he's got a pretty decent arm. Maybe not quite the cannon that Hudson Gray had, but still pretty decent arm. And so Beloit, Benson Barrett's a very talented kid. Beloit, they have 40 kids out for football. They're big. They have really good size on the lines, at the linebacking core. But they just got a lot of inexperience in certain places. In particular, the secondary pops into my head a little bit. There's some inexperience there. They've got receivers that played a little bit last year, but not like a ton. I mean, there's a few that played a lot of snaps, but didn't really see a lot of action, the ball coming to them and this and that. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Beloit does this year. But their schedule is somewhat favorable in regards to this is a good matchup tonight. Then they got games against Southeast Saline, who's state ranked in 3A. Concordia, I think, will still be solid, although they lost their outstanding tight end, Chaz Carlgren, to a torn ACL. But Beloit will be in a 2A district where it's wide open. Norton lost a lot. Phillipsburg had a down year last year. Hoisington lost their stud, Wyatt Pedigo, but they'll still be salty. Minneapolis has improved. I mean, that's a district that's kind of wide open in Class 2A. So Beloit won't have to play those games till later in the year when they've maybe figured out some things with these new faces in the spots, replacing a very talented senior class from a year ago. Republic County, a team that does not have a lot of size per se, they have a lot of inexperience. They get replacing everybody on the defensive line, and they have everybody is gone from the offensive line from a year ago except for one kid. So, but they have all their skill position guys back. They got the quarterback back. They got the receivers back. They got the running backs back. They got some really talented running backs. So the question is, can they block the Beloit lines?
Mm-hmm.
Can they block Beloit's defensive front? And if they can, then they're going to have some success. If they can't, then Beloit's going to control this game tonight, in my opinion. So the Trojans have the big advantage up front, as we heard from Brad Gobrunt, comes to size. And Beloit coming off a state quarterfinal appearance last year in 3 against Andale. And a team they'll be watching out for later in the year in Class 2A. So once again, live video stream tonight, Beloit, Republic County. Beloit's never lost to Republic County in football. They're 10-0, if I remember correctly in my notes. Against Republic County all time, 9-0 or 10-0. And most of those games have been extremely one-sided.
Mm-hmm.
But Republic County went 2-8 a year ago, did make the playoffs, lost Smith Center big in the first game. But they seem to be pointing in the right direction. Republic County, this is pretty amazing stuff, and it's not a good thing for Buffalo fans out there. Since 2006, Republic County has had a 29-game losing streak, a 33-game losing streak, and a 26-game losing streak. Their record in high school football since they went to Republic County High School, okay? 14 wins, 115 losses.
Yes.
That's not good. That's not good. No. But that though, none of those 129 games or whatever I just told you about, 14 and 115, have any impact on tonight's game.
No, not at all.
None whatsoever. So Beloit at Republic County tonight in Belleville, pregame at, or actually, yeah, pregame 6:45, kickoff at 7, live video stream, nckssports.com, via the Beloit Trojan channel. As we said, Dusty and Todd will be in Osborne. Osborne defending state champs in 8-man Division 2, coming off a perfect 13-0 season. They're going to get a test tonight. Hill City, a team, made the playoffs a year ago, 6-4. They've got all kinds of talented skill position players as well. And they can score a lot of points. They've given up a lot of points in the past. And Osborne Hill City have had some high-scoring affairs. What was that game a few years ago? 80-something?
2 years ago, 88-76.
88-76.
Yeah. Right, now, same place.
Listen, if that happens tonight, Dusty, you're going to have to go up and see Dusty in the press box and hand him a whole bunch of markers and paper because he's going to run out. Steve Tierney, head coach of the Osborne Bulldogs. Hill City is a team, a coaching staff that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, one thing he's done a very good job of is, you know, play into their strengths. You, a lot of times you get these coaches in that this is what we do because this is what I know, and it doesn't fit the team at all, but that's what they do because that's what the coach knows. I think this guy's done a very good job of coaching to their strengths, and they do have some strengths. So, yeah, we're definitely going to have to be ready for that.
The thing you talk so much about with Osborne since they went to 8-man is their speed, but, of course, we've seen it up close and personal all these years, Dusty, and we keep talking about it, but coaches find out when they play them. Is that Osborne? Oh, man, you got to contain their speed. You can't let them get into the wide open, and you got to get them at the line of scrimmage and get some penetration and disrupt the running game. But what you don't realize about Osborne, even sometimes when they're a little bit undersized, is they're still a physical team, and Travis Desby and the head coach of Hill City certainly is aware of that.
You know, last year, that's something that caught us off guard. We knew going in that they were going to be fast. They were a very physical team. They're, on defense especially, they came downhill, and they blew us up on the defensive side of the ball a lot. Now, I don't know what they've got. They've got two guys coming back that were pretty good. They've got the number 52 kid was really physical. He's coming back. Sure, kid's speedy. I expect him to be physical. I just don't know what kids are going to show up and what jersey number they're going to have. But speed for sure is going to be there. And like I said, they caught us off guard with physicality last year. So I'm not going to be surprised if they come out playing physical again tonight.
Hill City at Osborne. It'd be a good test for both teams to begin the season. Dusty, Hill City's got a lot of experience coming back. Osborne has talent coming back, but lost a lot to graduation. And it's not what you lost. It is what is coming up. Everybody focus on what you lost. Yeah, listen, you're not getting that back. It's gone. It graduated. Yeah. You get to just focus. You can't worry about that. You got to focus on what's coming up. And that's why you hopefully have a program where you've built, and this, we see this with Smith Center every year, they just reload instead of rebuild. The great programs reload instead of rebuild. There is no such thing as a rebuild. It's reload. And that's what Osmer typically has done since they went to 8-man.
Yeah, you were given Republic County's record since they started as Republic County. Osborne's record since they started playing 8-man football, this is their 11th season of 8-man football, they're 99-18. They've won 85% of their 8-man football games.
And a lot of those losses would be deep in the playoffs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so... It's in the 1 year they went 4-5. So you think about that 1 year that they had the only losing season they had, and you know that puts you at 95-13. So they've had a lot of success at the 8-man level. So they're looking for their 100
state championships.
Yep, three state championships in 13-16, and then last year, and then they're looking for their 100th 8-man victory tonight in just their 11th season. So they're averaging 10 wins per season in 8-man football.
I got bad news for Osborne fans though. I mean, come on, just sense the trend here. 13, 16, 19.
Yeah.
You're going to have to wait till 2022.
Yep.
That'll be the year. No.
I don't want to hear any of that.
You changed that. But it is. It's a tradition that they've created there once they went to 8-man, no doubt. We'll talk a little bit more about that tonight on the Football Express. Should be an exciting game, and I think you'll have a good one tonight.
Yeah. Mason Schur, Coach Tiernan, has talked about is – he thinks he's going to have a breakout year this year. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's going to be a focal point for that team with the six starters that they lost and seniors. But like you said, Hill City, a very experienced team. I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's hard for me to handicap this one to see without seeing Hill City because, you know, I've heard how they're experienced and who they have back, but I haven't seen them play probably for 3-4 years. So mm-hmm. It's going to be fun to actually see that. And like I said, I'm excited just to have the opportunity to be out there here tonight.
Yep. Osborne hosting Hill City tonight. Pregame 6:30 on KD Country 94, Z96.3 Lake, KDCountry94.com. Todd and Dusty with the call tonight. Elsewhere tonight, Lakeside's going to go to Logan to take on Logan Palco. Lakeside is a team to watch out for this year. Drew Dusky, the head coach of the Knights, gets to face a team that has some pretty physical running backs.
I don't think they're going to go out and win a speed race against anybody, but they get some momentum going, and they're going to be hard to get down. And that's what we've struggled with in the past is, you know, being able to wrap up and tackle. And I'll tell you what, if we don't hit low, you know, those running backs are just going to run right over us.
Lakeside's got a talented group of kids, and they've been kind of targeting this year and next year, Dusty, and this is their first taste of the season tonight, a road trip, and Lakeside, good things should happen for this team.
Yeah, and again, when we look deeper into the season, if we get that far, this is a tough district that they're in, and it's going to be kind of an evenly matched one, but tonight I think is a really good challenge, a physical challenge for them. I think Coach Dusky's excited to play a team like Logan Palco, just to see where his team is physically, because that's been one of the issues that they've had in the past, like he said. So, but talent-wise, man, it's there for Lakeside this year and definitely next if they can stay healthy and continue on the same path that they're on right now. Lakeside should do some good things.
And Lakeside fans, the game not on the radio tonight with us, but guess what? Next 3 weeks, we got Lakeside on against Rock Hills, Osborne, and Thunder Ridge. Those three be three pretty good tests for the Lakeside Knights. Mm-hmm. We know a lot more about their football team after weeks 2, 3, and 4, no question about it. Once again, that is Lakeside at Logan, Paco, and Logan tonight. For you St. John's Tipton Blue Jay fans, if you're not aware of this, it's very important to know, unless something changed and we're not aware of it, that your football game tonight is in Tipton.
Yes.
So do not go to Beloit. Well, you can go to Beloit tonight, but just make sure you're in Tipton by 7. All right, that's where the game is tonight.
Make sure the Sylvan fans know that, too.
Right.
And the team, too.
Because it seems like when they do they usually do one game in Tipton every mm-hmm. year. They usually do it during the season, not the very first game of the year, right?
It just kind of depends schedule. If I did a Hill City game right there the first game of the season.
All right.
Chase went to Beloit one time when the game was in Tipton. That's why I say Sylvan. Okay. Make sure you know you're in Tipton.
Of course, part of the co-op.
Not a very far trip for Sylvan, though.
Part of the co-op to St. John's and Tipton, of course. St. John's Tipton coming off a season where they made the playoffs a year ago. They're facing Sylvan Lucas in Tipton, which that's another reason probably why they did that.
Yeah.
Sylvan Lucas a little closer.
They usually try to get a closer trip for the team that they're playing if
Makes
they can
sense.
Make it work.
Makes sense. So Sylvan Lucas at St. John's Tipton, both teams made the playoffs last year, had good winning seasons. And Dan Gingler, head coach of St. John's Tipton, expects a good matchup tonight.
Looks like they've got a solid line back. Their main backfield, I think, is maybe going to have a little bit of change in there for sure. But I think it'll be a solid matchup. I think we're coming in good shape for things too. So I think it looks like should be a good game.
Sylvan Lucas at St. John's Tipton tonight in Tipton, and that should be a very competitive game.
Yeah. That's another one that's like, I don't know which way to lean on that one.
Isn't it refreshing of eight-man games where we don't know which way to lean instead of, halftime it'll be over.
And there's three of them in my mind tonight that we've already talked about that are like, I don't know how this one's going to go. We'll go out and see.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Rock Hill is in action. They'll play at 6 o'clock tonight against Wichita Homeschool there in Mankato. Kobe Hamill in his second year as a head coach feels good about this squad and what they've done this summer, and he'll face a team that, they're a competitive bunch.
They graduated 12 seniors last year. They went 8-1. Solid football program. You know, when you watch them on film, they do a lot of really good things. We expect them to be young, kind of green in some areas, but I think they're going to compete. You know, they get to spend a lot of time with each other weekly.
So Rock Hills tonight, starting their season at home against Wichita Homeschool. We'll be interested to see what Rock Hills does this year in a second year, getting a little bit used to the system that Coach Hamill wants to run.
Yeah, and that's the thing with him is he's excited about this year because he does have that 1 year in, extra week of practice with camp, and he just talking about that is really fired up and ready to go and thinks that this team could really excel here in year two for Coach Hamill, and I expect them to do some good things this year as well.
Wichita Homeschool at Rock Hills in Mankato tonight, and note the start time at 6 o'clock. You know, Stockton at Thunder Ridge tonight, and, you know, Thunder Ridge, a team coming off a great season a year ago, but have to replace Reese Struck off, and that's if we talk about not worrying about guys that graduate because you got to worry about what's coming up, but usually you don't have anybody like Reese Struck off coming up.
Yeah.
I mean, Reese Struck off last year ran for 2,100 yards, 47 touchdowns, 166 tackles on defense. Yeah, it's going to take a committee of many to replace him, but something tells me Thunder Ridge is still going to have a pretty good year. Hanover at Pike Valley tonight. Pike Valley's got 7 returners on each side of the ball. Lincoln off a 2-7 season at Tescott. And also in other action, Wilson at Southern Cloud, Trigo's at Chase. And then also in the NCAA tonight, Southeast Lane's at Minneapolis. That'll be an interesting game. Sacred Heart at Kinsley. As Dusty said, that Ellsworth couldn't play week one because of positive case in football camp on August the 11th. Didn't have enough practices in after quarantine, so Sacred Heart had to scramble. They're going to Kinsley. Sacred Heart didn't win a game last year. They only have 22 kids out for football. It's amazing how that football program has gone down in regards to being good. I mean, they were really, really good when I first moved here all the time. Smith Center Norton's going to be an interesting matchup. Runner-up in 2A Norton a year ago. Smith Center 1A runner-up. That should be a great ball game, you would think, although Smith Center has more returning than Norton, but that'd still be interesting to watch. Plainville at Phillipsburg, Russell at Ellis. Russell's first game in the Mid-Continent League after leaving the North Central Activity Association. And Concordia in action. They made the playoffs last year. And they were, I tell you what, that's a team that, you know, they could do some good things this year, but losing their middle linebacker and tight end of the torn ACL, Chaz Carlgren, is a big blow for them before they even started the season. Mm-hmm. I think it was the first practice that happened. So Wamigo's at Concordia tonight. So once again, the Express this evening at 5:40, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable. We'll preview all the matchups, hear from the coaches before the game, and then we will have your pregame at 6:30, Hill City at Osborne, and then kickoff at 7, Beloit Republic County from Belleville, ncksports.com, via Beloit Trojan Channel at 6:45 at pregame, and then the scoreboard show brought to you by State Farm Insurance at 10:05 tonight on both of our radio stations. Anything else to add about high school football tonight?
I think we covered it. Like I said, just excited to get out there and get going here this evening.
College football. There was some college football last night. UAB beats Central Arkansas 45-35. South Alabama knocked off Southern Miss 32-21. So there were a couple of college football games last night, which is good that we are at least able to mention and talk about that. NFL football notes. Former Oklahoma Sooner running back great Adrian Peterson, at the age of 35, the leading rusher for the Washington football team the last 2 years, has been released. So he is a free agent. One of the best names in sports, safety Clinton Ha-Ha Dix, looking for a team. He's been let go by the Dallas Cowboys, which opens the door, perhaps, for the Cowboys to pick up Earl Thomas, who's still looking for a team after the Ravens got sick of his antics. Turning to baseball, another night, another Royals game, another loss, but Hunter Doja hit a home run.
By when they can. That's well hit. Luis Robert is on the move, but that ball is going to land in and out of a seat in left center field, and Hunter Dozier has a trolley wire home run, and the Royals take a 1-0 lead in the first inning.
that was the only lead they would have because Danny Duffy would promptly turn around the next half inning in the top of the second, allow five runs. Royals down 5-1. Duffy ends up going six innings, seven hits, six runs, five walks, gave up two home runs. Royals would battle back, though. They scored three in the bottom of the sixth to close the gap to 6-4, but Jake Newberry gave it right back, gave up five runs in the top of the seventh. Just like that, Royals down 11-4. They end up losing to the White Sox 11-6. Royals now 14-24, but there is a bright spot, which I'll get to here in a moment. I'm trying to be as optimistic as I can about the Royals, and there is reason to be optimistic with youth and this and that. There's a player that made his debut for the Royals last night. We'll touch upon it in a moment. But Mike Matheny, manager of the Royals, said that even though Duffy had a rough outing, he did what his team needed after that tough second inning. He helped save the bullpen.
I don't think anybody was going to expect him to be standing out there as long as he did. Probably could have taken him a little bit further too, might get some extra rest on this next start. But he found his rhythm, found his breaking ball. Really, the breaking ball was a big difference maker for him once he got back out there. But that second inning, you're right at 40 pitches. We don't make that really nice relay from the outfield and beautiful tag at the plate. I'm not sure he's going to be in that game any longer. We're just at that point. And did a nice job of pulling it together, finding a new rhythm, and then eating up some time for the guys in the bullpen to not have to go run right through each of them. That was big for us.
So big for the Royals. They lose 11-6, and we're talking how big it is for a guy to go six innings. Baseball's changed just a little bit. Yeah. It used to be your guy would go eight and save the bullpen. Now it's like, hey, dude, get two-thirds of the game. Just get 18 of the 27 outs, and you've really helped our bullpen. It's just baseball's a different game, too. You don't see guys going complete games, not getting shutouts. You got all the pitch limits and everything else. It is just not the same. Not the same. But here's the good news. Edward Olivares, who they picked up from the Padres for closer Trevor Rosenthal before the trade deadline, he's only 24 years of age. He was called up before yesterday's game against the White Sox. He immediately was inserted in the lineup as a center fielder. He hit sixth. He went 2-for-5 with a double and two runs scored. So there you go.
Yeah.
He might be somebody that could be that center fielder of the future because Whit Merrifield isn't obviously an actual real center fielder. He does a decent job out there, but that's not really his main spot. By the way, Whit is struggling. He was 0-for-5 last night. Remember, he started the year pretty hot? His batting average is now down to .263. He just had a series where he went 0-for-17. So he is really struggling. And, of course, the Royals need some help, and they may get it eventually. More on that in a moment. Matt Harvey, age 31, signed as a minor league free agent on July 28th, made three starts last month. He gave up 12 runs in seven innings, ERA over 15. Last night, he came out of the bullpen and on one day's rest, and he went two-thirds of an inning, no runs, but did allow two hits. So he might be a piece for the Royals to use in the bullpen. And by the way, the Royals designated for assignment left-hander Randy Rosario, who walked in the winning run where Royals collapsed against the Cardinals. I knew he wouldn't be around very long. He was designated for assignment to make room for Olivares to come up yesterday. Which makes sense. Tonight, Brady, what's that?
Works
for you?
For me.
Good. Brady Singer, Royals rookie, 1-3 ERA, now over 5 against the White Sox tonight at 7:05. One thing that we should talk about with the Royals, not able to score a lot of runs, they are missing a piece to the puzzle, and that's Salvi Perez. He's had that eye issue, a floating particle in his left eye that's blurring his vision. He saw another specialist yesterday. Mike Matheny reports that Perez's condition is now improving for perhaps the first time since he went on the injured list more than 2 weeks ago. And Jorge Soler, who was removed from Wednesday's game because of oblique irritation and mid-back tightness, he's still day-to-day. Matheny said it was encouraging that trainer was able to loosen up the tightness, but he was not in the starting lineup yesterday. You take away Jorge Soler and Salvador Perez out of your lineup that already struggles when they're in it, and, yeah, it's tough to score runs.
Especially.
And Witt's struggling.
Yeah. Can't scratch them out like you used to, and you need the power.
Think about this. Before the season, we talked about the Royals, that they should be okay offensively. What did we say? Witt at the top of the order. Mondesi had a really good year last year. Mm-hmm. Those two could set the table at the top. Now you got some mashers and bashers. You got Dozier. You've got Soler. You got Franco you picked up. You got Salvi. That's a pretty good top six of the lineup, right? And you got Gordon at the bottom who can have occasional pop. You felt like that's not too bad. Nicky Lopez, second year as a big leaguer. And what has happened? Mondesi's been horrible at the plate. Perez has been hurt a lot or not able to play. Soler's now dinged up, and he struggled. Struck out, eight straight times. Now Witt's in a slump. I mean, these guys, on paper, it looks like you put it together to have a decent offense, but it just hasn't materialized this year.
Yeah, I'm like... Had the box.
Dozier, he was COVID on the injury list to start the year.
And you're looking at these batting averages like, this is not good.
Yeah. And batting averages don't always mean anything, but when you're hitting 118 or whatever it is, Mondesi, 185, that does.
He's down to 179 after 0 for 2 last night.
He didn't strike out last night, though. So that's a step in the right
direction. Did walk once, so that helps out the OBP a little bit.
Gives you a chance to at least steal a base with his speed. His speed's a little bit neutralized when he strikes out.
His OBP is 209.
It's horrible.
He's not walking or hitting. That's not good for a guy like him.
Not
he needs
good.
To be on base with the speed that he's got. It's just terrible.
That's the understatement of the year.
Yeah.
Hey, he strikes out and doesn't walk. That's not good. That's true.
Just like,
very true.
Whoa.
Yeah. So for the Royals to... Yeah, Mondesi's going to have to pick it up at some point, whether it's this year or next year. Like I said, I'm not worried about this year.
No, I mean, this year's
It's a messed up year preparation-wise. I mean, no, I know other teams are doing fine, but, you know, don't worry about it. Let's focus on Bubic and Singer and Oliveras. Let's focus on what they do. Let's still focus on Mondesi trying to figure some things out. You get Perez and Soler healthy, and let's just get ready and for spring training next year, okay? Let's just move on, get ready for next year.
That's where we're at, for sure.
No doubt. But at least we didn't have to go 162 games.
No doubt.
So if there's ever a year where it's a sprint instead of a marathon was better, maybe for Royals fans it was okay. All right, the NBA playoffs. What a wacky, crazy last 30 seconds between the Celtics and the Raptors. Remember this thing we've been talking about the last few days about razor thin, that the difference between winning and losing is razor thin? How about this?
Back to Van Vliet. They'll get it set up again. Two-point game, Van Vliet. Oh! With the left hand by Van Vliet, and we are tied at 101. And a chance to go up 3-0. Toronto does have a foul to give. Walker on the double team gets by. Walker dishes. Tice with the dunk with 0.5 left. Series on the line. Anunoby got it. Oh, there it goes. OG Anunoby buries a triple at the buzzer.
Okay, this is why people love having a timeout to advance the ball. That's what makes basketball exciting. I'm not a big first of all, as a spectator, and I want to be entertained, right?
Sure.
If you're a spectator, you want to be entertained. Are you not entertained? You want to be entertained. So that rule is awesome if you want to be entertained. But strictly straight up, in regards to, and both teams get to play under the same rules, I get this, it is completely unfair to the defense. What did the offense do to deserve to advance the ball from all the way from 94 feet all the way up to the 28-foot line? What did they do to earn it? They did nothing to earn it. So the defense gets punished.
Yeah. All you did was save the timeout.
That's
to
it.
Earn it.
You got the timeout to in exchange for, you know, 60 feet of distance or whatever, which is a big deal. So if you didn't have the advancement like you did last night, then there would have been no three-pointer at the buzzer.
That's
and the Raptors would
have,
right. And the Raptors would be down 3-0. So I'm kind of torn on the thing. From a basketball purist standpoint, I think it's hogwash because you're penalizing a defense. However, from an entertainment spectator standpoint, and it's about ratings and getting people to watch games, it is the right move. It is the right rule to have. And I can live with it. I'm cool with it. And I'm going to tell you something. That was unbelievable to watch last night because – you talk about razor thin. You heard it during the call. Half a second. 0.5 remaining in the game. The Raptors were half a second away from being down 3-0. Defending NBA champions were half a second from being done. No NBA team's ever come back from 3-0. Only one team in major sports franchise history has ever done that, and that was the Red Sox against the Yankees in, what was that, 04, whatever it was.
04, yeah.
So you're done. You have half a second left. Thankfully, for a rule that allows you to advance the ball after calling a timeout, you still have hope, even though the Celtics just dunked the ball to take a lead 103-101. And so Taco Fall, 7'5", comes in to guard the inbounder, Kyle Lowry, who's all of 6'2", maybe 3, and he's jumping up and down trying to, you know, cause problems. And Lowry able to throw it all the way across the court, which is an amazing pass.
Like,
Lowry sits there and says, I didn't do anything. It's a talk about Anunoby. He's the one who hit the shot. Lowry, dude, that pass was amazing. Consider who was in front of you.
Yeah.
Threw it all the way to the other side. And Anunoby caught it and shot it so quickly and got it off in time. Because if it's 3/10 or less, you got to do a tip. But anything over that, you can actually catch and shoot, which I still argue there's no way – in half a second, you can catch and release the ball. But the clock doesn't start right when you actually, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's no way, I don't think, you can catch and shoot that ball. Catch, gather, and shoot in five-tenths of a second. But it always has been that way, and that's fine. No big deal. What a shot. What a shot. Yeah. What a pass. And there you have it. The Raptors are down 2-1. This could change the entire series.
Yes.
And that's the difference between winning a series, losing a series. It's the difference between winning a game, being up 3-0, and losing a game, being down 3-0, or now winning and being within 2-1. You've cut the deficit in half when you have been down 3-0.
Yeah. You need to think about everything that has to go right.
Yeah.
On that play to be able to win that game on a three-pointer.
Uh-huh.
And it's just insane. Like, I don't know. First of all, I'm guessing they're sucked into the lane because they do have Taco Fall guarding the inbound pass.
Sure. They and they're only up two at the time.
Go over all the way to that, to that side of the court. But it's tough. You can't give up a three right there to lose either. And it's like, oh, man, he's wide open by the end of it because it was a perfect pass.
Oh, they earned it.
But to the guy's credit defensively for the Celtics, he got over there fairly quick and really made it an issue for the shot. But like we were talking about, he got it off so fast. Because, I mean, even, you know, you can catch and shoot. He didn't necessarily even really all the way catch and shoot.
No.
Like, he got it and it was off. But if he catches and waits just even a millisecond more, that shot might be blocked because he got over.
Right.
The Celtics.
Which happened in the Rocket-Thunder game.
Yeah.
Was a very similar situation because Dort took longer to unleash the shot.
To line it
whereas
up, yeah.
Here,
and
yeah,
this
because
one was just like kind of boom, it's off your hand.
Because Jaylen Brown nearly got to it and blocked it.
It was almost blocked. Yeah. I mean, honestly, when you kind of watch the slow replay from the back angle, it looks like he almost got a fingertip on it.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't, obviously. Probably would have changed the trajectory of it. But, man, just even a millisecond later, I think that could have been tipped by the finger and gone off track.
But Anobi has done this many times this season where he has been in a last-second shot clock situation, end of a quarter situation. They have a whole article on CBSSports.com that he knows how to just slingshot it. It's not a prayer. He gathers himself, but he's got such a quick release. And he knew, I got to catch and heave. And he did it so quickly to where it was in time. You would think it's inconceivable it can happen, but I guess it can. I still say it probably can't. But he made it to where it is. And the other thing that he does, he puts a lot of high arc on it.
Yeah.
Every single one of these shots they go back and they have on this article, and there's a video replays, it's a rainbow shot because he knows somebody's going to be closing out on him, so he ain't having any chance. I can't shoot a line drive. You know, that was the problem with Dort. It took him too long to wind up the other night, and Harden was allowed to recover and make a great block. And that's where that's why these players work on such their quick releases. Catch and shoot. Klay Thompson's one of the best at it. You know, Steph Curry's really good at it. J.J. Redick is great at it. Your best outside three-point shooters, they can catch and shoot really quickly. Most of the guys that don't need to dribble the ball and they come off screens and picks, they got to be quick release guys. Now, there are other three-point shooters like a Kyle Korver. He's got a pretty decent release, quick release, but not super quick. Where those are guys that are spot-up shooters. Those are spot-up three-point guys. So you see my drift. There is a difference because J.J. Redick and Kyle Korver, honestly, are more of a spot-up shooter. They're looking, you know, LeBron, whoever it is, they kick it out. Those guys open. They knock down the three. J.R. Smith would be another one, okay? At times has been a good three-point shooter in his career. But then there's other guys that are great shooters that have these super quick releases. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, guys like that. Well, Anobi has a quick release, and he's done it over and over this year. And it's not like it was the first time he was in that situation. And the Celtics actually know it. But they, like you said, you can try to defend everything you can. You got to. The thing is, if that game's a three-point game, the Celtics defend it completely different, obviously. But it's two, so you're still defending a two to not go to overtime. So you got to make – you got. And then the ball was on the far side, so it's really hard – to throw it all the way across the court, catch, shoot with half a second left, and Jaylen Brown still almost blocked it.
Yeah.
I mean, the defense wasn't bad at all. That was just one heck of a play.
Yeah.
And the pass has to be perfect,
by the way. It's insane when you really think about what, like I said, had to go into that shot going in with 5/10 of a second left.
Absolutely. Well, you know what reminded me of?
They're pros. I mean,
yeah.
They showed that in a play like that.
It reminded me of the Derek Fisher shot against the Spurs. I know this brings back bad memories for you.
Yes.
But that, I mean, that the Lakers, how much time was on the clock when Fisher caught it? 0.8?
I'm pretty sure they were 4/10.
4/10.
Yeah. Because it's like the limit of when you can catch.
Which I remember watching that going, there is no way he could have shot that in 4/10 of a second.
No.
There's no way. He caught and turned it, didn't he? Catch and turn?
Yeah.
And that clock got started late. There's no way that should have counted, in my opinion. But based on how the clock started and this and that, I mean, it counted. And it was a dagger for the Spurs. And that's why in the NBA, it doesn't matter if you score with half a second left, 4/10 of a second, maybe even 3/10 of a second, 6/10, 1.1, until the buzzer hits zero. If the other team has a timeout, they still have a chance. And that's what happened last night.
Yeah.
Wow. So the Raptors are still alive. That was huge. 2-1. The Celtics up now on the Raptors. Van Fleet at 25, Lowry 31. Tatum was held to 15 last night for the Celtics. My pick to win the NBA championship. This is why you don't freak out early. You know, Clippers didn't look so great early. They're down. It was 2-2. Mavs hit the game-winning shot by Doncic, and there's questions. Paul George was struggling. Maybe the Clippers have figured something out. And, oh, by the way, they're now at full strength, which they have the best roster in the NBA, in my opinion, from top to bottom. They got two stars, and George and Leonard's maybe one of the best. Well, Leonard might be the best player in the NBA. You could argue he is. And then you add in Patrick Beverley. The Clippers not only can score, but they can play defense. At least they've had the capability. At times, they did not play great defense in the Mavericks. But as they get, you got to remember these teams like the Lakers. I heard this stuff about the Lakers. They looked horrible in their 8 games before starting the playoffs. I was like, I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Those games meant nothing to the Lakers. They're already number one seed. The Clippers didn't care if they were a 2 or 3 seed because there's no home court advantage. It's in a bubble.
Yeah.
So they didn't worry about the whole plan for the Lakers and the Clippers is very simple. Let's build for the playoffs. We don't care.
Just get back into the flow.
Yeah, right.
Go out and play. And
get into the
whatever
flow.
Happens, happens.
Build the chemistry.
We know who and where we are.
Right. The Clippers and Lakers understand the end game, and that is it's the end game, and that is the playoffs. And the Lakers looked a lot better. Obviously, after game one against Portland, they figured some things out, didn't they? And the Clippers, after losing that on that 3-point shot by Doncic, they've figured stuff out since then, haven't they?
Yes.
And last night, you know, I know, the Nuggets coming off the emotional Game 7 win, you can see that coming sometimes. The Clippers blew out the Nuggets last night. It was 120-97. It wasn't really even that close. Kawhi Leonard with 29. The Nuggets, Jamal Murray was held to, 12 points on 5 of 15 shooting. He was averaging 32 a game in the first round against the Jazz. But the Clippers play better defense than the Jazz, although Rudy Gobert is a very good defender for the Jazz. Clippers up 1-0. Does it mean the Clippers are going to win the series? No. Although I'm picking Clippers to win the whole thing, so of course I'm picking them to win the series. And it's just one game, and it's a blowout. And I think the Nuggets, you know, all right, we came off the Game 7 win. You see this a lot. You come out a little flat Game 1 next series, and then you go, okay, game on, series on. But the Clippers made a statement last night. They shot 57% from the floor, held the Nuggets down to 100 points, which is hard to do this year in the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And they held Jamal Murray to 12 points. If the Clippers and Jokic only scored 15. Now, granted, Nuggets missed some shots, but the Clippers, that's the best game they played so far in the playoffs. It does look like the Lakers and Clippers are getting better with each and every game. And they are on a collision course to meet each other in Western Conference Finals after people are freaking out. Well, the Lakers haven't played very well in these 8 games. The Clippers, oh, my gosh, they might lose to the Mavericks. It's like, yeah, chill out, relax. The series was tied. The Mavs weren't up 3-2. It was 2-2.
Yeah, I really haven't had much of a doubt that those two teams were going to be.
Yeah.
As long as the Clippers were healthy and had their full roster potential.
Yep.
No doubt. I mean.
They're healthy now.
The Nuggets, you know, they're a good team, and they're just so inconsistent. And I don't think
their defense
have the
is inconsistent, yeah. In my opinion.
And they have the firepower to beat the Lakers, or the Clippers, I mean.
Yeah, or the Lakers.
Yeah, or the Lakers. But yeah, the Clippers, but then the Rockets. You know about the Rockets.
Yeah, Rockets, I mean, don't have enough either,
the defense
think.
Is not going to be there when it needs to be.
And
until proven otherwise, yeah. I'm always going to say that about the Rockets.
I'm with you on that one. Lakers-Rockets, speaking of that, they start their series tonight, Game 1, on ESPN at 8 o'clock. The Bucks and the Heat. Bucks have to win tonight, you would think. Heat up 2-0 in that best of 7. That's at 5:30 tonight on TNT. The Bucks are the one seed, down 2-0. Grizzly guard Ja Morant is the NBA Rookie of the Year. Received 99 first-place votes. The other first-place vote went to Zion Williamson. He was in third place, even though he didn't play much of the year.
Zion Williams shouldn't. That's a name. He should never have gotten that vote.
Miami Heat guard Kendrick Nunn finished second with 204 points. The NBA rules or awards are messed up. Their awards are messed up because Devontae Graham wasn't even a finalist for Most Improved Player of the Year.
Yeah, that's insane.
And he should have been the Most Improved Player of the Year. Instead, it was Brandon Ingram. I mean, going from 5 points to averaging 20 and going from like 20 threes to 100-some threes. I mean, it was insane how much he improved. He wasn't even on the list. Luka Doncic was, and that's what Doncic argued. He said, dude, Devontae should be on here. And Luka saying, why am I on Most Improved list? I should be in the MVP list, which is right. But John Morant gets Rookie of the Year. He's a stud. We saw at Murray State. I mean, you could tell his game was going to translate. He had quite the year for the Grizzlies. Got him in the playoffs. Averaged 18 points, 7 assists. And how about this? He shot 49% from the floor, which is really good. He's not just one of those guards, you know, that shoots threes. He can drive it. He can dunk it. He can finish it. And he's all of, 6'3"? The kid can fly. He's an amazing talent. And he's going to be really good for quite some time as long as he stays healthy.
Absolutely.
Grizzlies
should have been a unanimous pick. I agree with you. Whoever that was that voted for Zion.
Yeah.
Get the name out of your head, man.
Well, it's kind of like the Baseball Hall of Fame where somehow people vote against George Brett, Tom Seaver, and every single guy that made Hall of Fame, somebody voted against him except for Mariano Rivera, which still bothers me to this day because Mariano Rivera was a great closer and unbelievable pitcher. But you're telling me, how could Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio, and there's tons of great players over the years, obviously. How do those guys not get 100% vote? Not that it matters. It blows me away. How can you not get 100% vote? The Flyers beat the Islanders 5-4 in double overtime last night. Got another game 7.
Full crisscrossing. Him and Hayes shoved by Barzal. Up top, cruising is Provorov. He scores! Ivan Provorov wins it in overtime. Game 7, Saturday.
That's right, folks. We've got three game 7s in hockey. Three game 7s, and all three were 3-1 at one point.
Yeah.
All right? The Flyers beat the Islanders 5-4 in double overtime last night. That series tied 3-3. The Golden Knights of Vegas shut out last night by the Canucks 4-0. The Knights were up 3-1. That series now tied 3-3. The Avs are down 3-1 against the Stars. They've won the last two. You heard it here first. The Avs stole from Dusty. The Avs are going to, because Dusty just wouldn't put W instead of C. He said could. I said would. There's a big difference. Avalanche against the Stars this afternoon at 3 o'clock on USA television. I didn't know hockey was on USA. It's not even in the USA right now, but it'll be on USA because these are hubs are in Canada, of course. You don't know that. Stars Avalanche gave 7 winner take all, and the Canucks tonight, 8 o'clock against the Golden Knights game 7 winner take all. That'll be 8 o'clock on NBC Sports Television. And then tomorrow evening at 6:30 on regular NBC. Oh, yay for the Hockey League. Islanders and the Flyers. What do you know? Philadelphia and New York, two big media markets. Thus, that gets a primetime game at 6:30 tomorrow night on Saturday on NBC. I'm telling you, there's nothing better than a Game 7 in any of these series, in any sport. A Game 7 in playoffs in baseball is amazing. A Game 7 in the NBA is amazing. NHL Game 7s are amazing as well. I don't care what sport it is. You go to a deciding Game 7, there's nothing better.
Yeah, and hockey can take it to an extra level.
Oh, yeah. Game 7 sudden death. Like 4 overtimes. You know,
like no matter what overtime it is, just Game 7 like, sudden death.
You can play
like,
forever. Yeah.
You know, that's something that just can't be matched. I mean, you can walk off in a baseball game, I guess. You tied at 4 or something, go in and hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth, and you win at 5-4 or something like that. But, and you can hit a buzzer beater in basketball, but, man, when you get into that overtime and sudden death, it's just boom, your season's over.
Yeah.
And it's game 7. It's like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
One bad millimeter move that you made that changes your whole season.
There you go. There's that razor-thin part that we've been talking about all week long. The Chiefs next Thursday on Z96.3 The Lake. Chiefs hosting the Texans, NFL opener. Defending Super Bowl champions open up against a team they were down 24-0 to in that very stadium. And then came back and walloped them 51-31. one of the wildest games I've ever seen in playoff history. And I know so many people watching the Chiefs game had given up when it was 24-0. Like, here we go. This is the Chiefs choking. And they were choking. There's no other better way to explain it.
They were tight.
They were so tight. Fans were so nervous. And I just remember my son said, "It's over, Dad. Same old Chiefs." I said, "You know, I would usually agree with you, but we still have 15, and this team can score points. And the only good thing about being down 24-0 in this situation is it's happened so early, we got a lot of time."
Yeah.
Whereas if that was Alex Smith quarterback, and I love Alex, and I hope he does great in his comeback with the Redskins, or excuse me, the Washington football team, but there's no way they would have came back 24-0 with Alex Smith quarterback, or really probably anybody else at quarterback. I think the only quarterbacks that could have come back from that deficit last year would have been Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, last year.
And
what Brady in the past, maybe, you would put on that maybe list just based on what happened in the Super Bowl,
right?
Against the Falcons, but
possibly, yeah. Those three would be it.
Yeah.
And so glad to have number 15 on our side.
I was actually discussing that again last night with somebody, and I'm like, the craziest thing about that was, they're down 24-0, but they already had the lead by halftime again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they were up before.
Wait, what?
It was up 28-24, 28 unanswered, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, the game changed when they didn't go for it on 4th and inches,
absolutely.
When I thought
that's
for sure
the same
they
thing
would.
We were talking
that
about
whole
last
thing.
Night too.
I was so happy when they kicked that field goal because I knew they were going to get it on 4th and inches the way the game was going.
Uh-huh.
And if they got that, it was 28-0. I think the Chiefs are done. And you may say, well, that was only a difference of 4 points. Yeah, but you're still only down 3 scores. Three touchdowns, 3 2-point conversions.
When you think you get another touchdown and you're up
28-0. Yeah, 4-touchdown deficit. I mean, maybe they still would have come back and it wouldn't have mattered. I don't know. Possibly.
Yeah.
But that was big. And then, of course, the fake punt. Shortly after, that didn't help anything either. But that was one wild and wacky game. You talk about emotions and changes in momentum. But I saw this conversation yesterday, and we'll leave with this to wrap up the show. I really don't like I know what the Chiefs are doing. I have no problem with the Chiefs saying, hey, we want to be a dynasty. The goal is dynasty, dynasty, dynasty. But the Chiefs don't go out there. The players don't go out there and say they are a dynasty. They say our goal is to become the next dynasty.
Yeah.
They don't say we are a dynasty. It's foolish to say they're a dynasty. They've only won one Super Bowl.
You can't be.
You can't be.
Like, by definition.
Dan Orlovsky on ESPN the other day apparently said, and I think he's really good at what he does, and I think he just did it to get headlines, but he said the Chiefs are a dynasty. And Keyshawn Johnson came back at him, and Keyshawn I love because he just says what he thinks too.
Yeah.
And Keyshawn goes, come on, man. That's what he likes to say.
Yeah.
He goes, come on, man. What are you talking about? He goes, for crying out loud, last year the Chiefs were down 24-0. He said they're down by 2 scores in every playoff game. They barely won it last year. He said, why do you think they're automatically going to win a Super Bowl this year and become a dynasty? And so Orlovsky came back at Keyshawn and said, okay, in the next 10 years, how many Super Bowls are the Chiefs going to win? And Keyshawn said, one. And Orlovsky said, oh, 2, 3, there'll be a dynasty. And Keyshawn goes, dude, I'm telling you, I played the game, you played the game. It is extremely hard to win a Super Bowl. It's not easy. Just look at what the Chiefs had to go through last year. And he's right.
Oh, yeah.
And if the Chiefs don't get a break from the Dolphins beating the Patriots and the Chiefs have to be playing an extra playoff game last year, I'm not convinced the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. So they caught a few breaks, but they took advantage of those breaks. And now they're going to open up the season Thursday on Z96.3 The Lake against the Texans to open up the year with about 16,000 fans in attendance. What do you want to say?
No, it's just like, yeah, the Patriots losing thing, you know.
That helped a lot.
Now you open with the Titans.
Yes.
Instead of playing them in the championship game and all those things that are in your mind.
That's what the Patriots had to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but the Chiefs would have had to do that is what I'm saying.
Right.
Had they not. And
a team that had beaten them during the regular season.
Yeah, and all the things that are in your mind. And if you get down on 24-0 to the Titans and things are, you know.
Right.
And I know they were down by 10 two different times to the Titans, but
yeah,
it was a different situation. And
it goes back to what I've
well
said.
For you when it, you can get that first round, which is only available for the number one seed
this
now.
Year, yeah. It goes back to what I've said before. When you go on this long drought and you don't win championships, fans go, God, let's just win one. We'll never win a championship. And they're always pessimistic. Oh, we'll find a way to blow it. And that's what Chiefs fans were thinking, down 24-0. And we're going to lose, da-da-da. And then all of a sudden, they win one. Oh, it's easy now.
Yeah.
We're just going to win 5 in the next 10 years. And it's just called expectations. All of a sudden, you act like a spoiled brat because you won one Super Bowl. It's like, big deal. You know, you won one. That's pretty cool. It is a big deal. But the Patriots are going, big deal. Even the Denver Broncos can say, big deal. We've got 3, right? That what the Broncos have?
Yeah.
3. You know, the Steelers, big deal. We got 6. Patriots got 6. Cowboys got 5. Niners got 4. Big deal. You got one. That's great. Well, it is a big deal when you win for the first time in 50 years. And you got a stud star quarterback at the age of 24 locked up on a long-term extension. But now you are the hunted. You are the favorite by everybody, basically, to win the Super Bowl this year. You got everybody re-signed. Your coach is happy. You got your GM going to be re-signed. You got your quarterback. Your tight end's got an extension. Tyreek Hill's under contract. And Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark. And now Chris Jones is happy. And all this stuff has happened. You got basically everybody back. And everybody seems happy. You got a great first-round running back you drafted. And all the expectations are that the Chiefs are going to win. And I've always said, unless it was Tiger Woods in golf when he was dominant, I've always said, if you have to bet, here's some betting advice. You can take the advice all you want. I'm not responsible for it. But what I'm trying to tell you is, if you play to percentages, if you would wager on every single sport, and let's say every single sport this year, let's say the NBA, Major League Baseball, college basketball, college football, NFL, all five, okay? NHL, you can go all the way through, right? Six or seven entities. If you give me an overwhelming favorite in every one of those organizations and you bet the field in every single one of those wagers, you will come out ahead. I will virtually guarantee it. Because in college football or basketball, it's a one-game situation.
Yeah.
So we saw Kentucky. I remember Kentucky going into the tournament undefeated, remember? Got 40-0, and I said, I'll take the field. And everybody's like, you're nuts. I'm like, play the percentages. And Kentucky almost defied everybody. They were 40-0, made it to the national semifinals, and lost to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And that was that, right? And that's why the Chiefs are my team. I don't like being the overwhelming favorite. It worries me a little bit because you're the hunted. You're going to get everybody's best shot. But on top of that, it's 29 or 31 other teams. 31 other teams trying to knock you off. So when you, if you bet Alabama to win the national championship of football, yeah, you probably got a better bet on that because there's a hierarchy in college football. College basketball, oh, good luck with that. In a tournament style, okay, Kansas is the overwhelming favorite or Duke's the overwhelming favorite. Bet, take the field, man. Take the field. NHL, same way. Major League Baseball. I don't know how many times we heard the Yankees or Red Sox are automatically going to win it, and they didn't. The NFL, we've seen it many times. Teams are just, oh, yeah, that's the team. The Packers, they're going to, the 15-1, remember that? They're going to win it, and they lost in the divisional round of the playoffs. So we see it all the time, and that's what worries me here if you're a Chiefs fan. You won it last year.
Yeah.
You weren't the favorite going in. The Ravens were. And then you ran the table and rallied from all these deficits. Now you got everybody back. Everybody seems to be happy, which worries me a little bit too. And you do have great chemistry, which is awesome. You've got stability. This is the best team to handle this offseason because you don't have all these moving, changing parts. It's just almost like everything's aligned and everybody's sitting there saying the Chiefs automatically going to win the Super Bowl. And when people say that, I cringe. And if I had to bet today on who's going to win the Super Bowl, and you were told me, Wade, are you going to take the field or are you going to take the Chiefs? I would take the field.
100%.
My heart's going to say Chiefs, but my head's going to tell me I'm taking the field. One Mahomes injury changes everything. A certain injury on this team can change everything. And we know how lucky sometimes you need to get, as we just saw last night in the Raptors-Celtics series. It's razor thin, baby. It's razor thin. So I am with Keyshawn. Great that the Chiefs won last year, but for crying out loud, you're already calling them a dynasty? How about they win two first?
Come on, Dan.
You better win two first. Before you can talk about any dynasty, you do need to win two.
Oh, 100%.
You have
to. You cannot be a dynasty with one championship.
Even the Warriors, when the Warriors won two, the talk was, listen, we're still not there, but we're on our road to it.
Yeah.
And, of course, they had a great chance and then blew it against the Cavaliers. And they'd still consider it a dynasty, but it'd be a much even stronger threshold had they won against the Cavaliers when they blew that 3-1 lead.
There's certain things you got to do.
Right.
And obviously there's some dynasties that are above the others.
Yes.
Like the Celtics and Bulls and, you know, when you win that many of them.
Yeah.
But, it's just
Lakers.
Yeah, Yankees are,
that's the ultimate
dynasty.
They're
the ultimate dynasty in sports.
No doubt.
And, you know, lately people might not know that, but if you look at their history, they're obviously, nobody's even close to them in championships.
Well, I forgot what hockey team has a ton of championships.
Yeah, it might be Montreal, maybe.
Maybe so, yeah.
But hockey does have a team that might be closer than any other sport.
Right.
You know,
right.
8-20. Right. So what is it, 27 for the Yankees?
Yeah, I think
the Celtics have 8, and that's the most. You know,
the Celtics have
well, they have 11. They, I guess they, I think they have 11. I think they had.
Yeah, so they said,
they've got plenty of them.
Well, UCLA was a dynasty.
That stretch,
right?
But yeah, it's the Celtics are obviously the NBA's dynasty, and UCLA in college.
Celtics have 16, by the
16,
way.
16. Okay.
Lakers are right behind with 15.
I would think of that group at 111.
Yeah. Yeah, that was Bill Russell's group.
Yeah,
Bill
yeah.
won 11. Russell won 11 championships.
Yeah,
which wasn't
that's kind of what was in my mind on that, and mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't adding all the other ones up, but yeah, I mean, you got you just start talking about dynasties, and oh, the Chiefs have 2 championships in their entire franchise history, and you can call them a dynasty,
right?
And they were 50 years apart. No,
I'm off by 1. By the way, Celtics have 17, Lakers have 16.
Okay,
and then the Bulls have 6. The Golden State Warriors / Philadelphia, San Francisco Golden State Warriors have 6. Spurs have 5.
Yeah.
76ers, Pistons, Heat have 3. Rockets, Knicks 2, and then everybody else has 1. So 33 of the 73 NBA titles reside in 2 towns.
Oh, and the LA NBA is without question the easiest league to have a dynasty currently.
Yes.
Like if you can get the right people together, the NBA, we've gone over it. It was like a... There was like a stretch of like 25 years, I think, where 7 teams won championships.
Exactly.
Something, I mean, I don't quote those actual numbers, but mm-hmm. that's just kind of an example of what it is.
And the Yankees have 27 World Series championships, and the next highest, the Cardinals have 11.
Yeah, baseball is not even close.
Red Sox have 9, and most of those were way back. Yeah. And then, of course, they had 3 in the last 15, 20 years. It's the Yankees 27, Cardinals 11, Red Sox 9. From 1903, so that would be 116 years, 116 championships reside in 3 towns, New York, St. Louis, and Boston.
Yeah. It's the Canadians have 24 in hockey.
There
you
go, 24. So those are dynasties.
Yeah.
I mean, the Royals or the Chiefs aren't going there. We're talking modern dynasties. Your modern dynasties would be the Patriots, the Warriors. I mean, those are the two that come to my mind here very recently.
Yeah.
That'd be your dynasties, and that's what the Chiefs are trying to do, which obviously it's been proven to be done in the NFL.
Yes.
Let's just see if the Chiefs can do it. They might be on their way, but they're not one yet. Okay, let's set the schedule again, Dusty, tonight.
Yeah, tonight, Football Express from Cunningham Telephone and Cable at 5:40 on Katy Country 94 and simulcast on Z96 Point Through the Lake. Pregame coverage at 6:30, kickoff at 7 on both of our stations for Hill City at Osborne. And then on NCCastSports.com, online video stream, Beloit Trojan Channel, Beloit at Republic County. Pregame about 6:45, kickoff, I should say, at 7 o'clock. And then we'll conclude the local high school football scoreboard show at 10:05, brought to you by State Farm Insurance in Beloit and Osborne.
Folks, like I said, enjoy it. Enjoy, and appreciate what you have tonight. There's no guarantee you're going to have it next week.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.